Ellen Stecker Radio Hour coming at you now on KAXE.
My true love do part. I cried last night and the night before. Cried last night and the night before. Cried last night and the night before. I'm gonna cry tonight and cry no more. I wish to the Lord that train would come. I wish to the Lord that train would come. Wish to the Lord that train would come and take me back where I come from.
Ellen Stecker is a folk musician, professor emeritus of English at the University of Minnesota, a former president of the American Folklore Society, and Minnesota's first state folklorist. She released four albums of folk music in the 50s and recently teamed up with producer Ross Wild to update her early music with modern technology and reissue it, most recently her 1956 record Ballads of Careless Love. And right now, Ellen and Ross are joining me on KAXE. Ellen from her home in South Minneapolis. Am I getting that right?
That's right.
And Ross all the way from California?
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you. Just start off saying thank you for joining me, you two.
Thanks for having us.
It's surely a long distance interview, I must say.
Yeah, if you count up all the miles. Ellen, we're not so far apart, but with Ross as well. I got a lot of questions about the past and the early days of this album, but I actually wanted to start things off with more of a, how are you feeling right now, Ellen, about being able to hear Ballads of Careless Love and this early music? How are you feeling now about being able to hear the updated versions and hear it in a new light?
Well, Ross has done an absolutely remarkable job. And I should point out to you, too, that my voice is not what it used to be. I lost a vocal cord about 5 years ago, which put an end to what I thought was my second career as a singer. Instead, I found Ross, or Ross actually found me, and I now have a second career. Ross is not only renewing and remastering my old albums, he's also dug into an old archive I've got here of my songs that have never been publicized in any way, except at the concerts I gave where I had given them. So I feel, when I hear the songs, as Ross has redone them, I really am delighted, because I always felt that my voice was not heard properly in my early recordings. And I do think, indeed, you can ask Ross what he's doing. He's not just making my voice into somebody else's. He's doing it the way I hear it, I heard it in my head. So he's just wonderful.
I don't want to nerd out too much, but Ross, could you briefly say what technology you used and what you did to it?
Yeah, so it's this AI model. It's this open source AI model that I got a couple years ago. And it's just really cool technology. With the model, you can separate the stems of a track, which stems meaning like different instruments from vocals and let's say like drums and guitar and vocals, and you can separate them into three different tracks. And then you can remix them.
You got all the drums out of my recordings.
Well, interestingly enough, Ellen doesn't have any drums, of course, in many of her recordings, but there are clicks and pops in the recordings. And when you use this AI model to separate, you know, drums or something out, that actually separates these this unwanted noise as well. And so we're able to do that with her recordings, and we're also able to remix how loud her vocals are compared to her guitar, which was kind of a problem with some of her recordings early on, because when they were recorded live, it was just, the mix was out of sync. So it's really cool that we're able to do this now with old recordings.
Well, I'm still alive, which is really remarkable. My old age has disappeared. I, aside from just the way I am physically, I feel like I'm in a new world.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're speaking to you on Zoom, and AI technology able to separate out your voice must be remarkably different from the setting of the room where you recorded Ballads of Careless Love. Can you tell us what you remember about who you recorded it with, what the room was like, who put up the money for the recording? Yeah, what was it like back then?
Okay, I was at Cornell University as an undergraduate, learning what gracious living was, as they used to say about women in the women's dorms. And I didn't really take very well, but so I was doing a radio program every Wednesday night, and the fellows who ran it finally came to me and said, "Would you like to do a record for us? We've done a record for the professor who I was assisting. They had done one with his previous assistant, and so they were an established group." I thought, Cornell Recording Society, which, by the way, disappeared after I did my record. And aside from that, everything's fine. The record was a nice record. I enjoyed it very much. I did it in the studio where I had done my radio program, behind a thick wall of glass were a bunch of friends who were making faces at me all the time. But aside from that, it was a perfectly good situation. Nobody put up the music except for my tuition and my room and board that I had been paying, and whatever they got for the radio program. So it was a self-published, so to speak, production of Cornell, and about 1,000 records were printed, and anybody who has one can get a lot of money if they go on eBay and try to sell it.
Yes, because when you did the remastering, Ross, right, you ended up not being able to find the tapes. So basically, you went with the best condition record you could find?
Yeah, I found a decent copy on Discogs, but it was difficult because it's also worth noting that you couldn't find any of these recordings online whatsoever. The only one that was available online was one that someone put up years ago, Dink Song, which was actually the first song that I heard from Ellen, because I was a really big fan of this song, Dink Song, which is an old folk song from the long time ago. And that was the only song off the album that you could find anywhere. And if you wanted to listen to any of the other songs, you actually had to have a copy of the album, which is pretty cool, I thought. But yeah, it was tough. And I wish we could have found the tapes, because that would have really brought just a different sonic quality to the album. But I'm actually not too disappointed, because it's quite cool to hear like the static of the record that you hear in this recording. And I think it adds an interesting quality to it.
We will get back to the conversation shortly. Let's take a listen to the song that Ross just mentioned as the first he ever heard from Ellen. From Ballads of Careless Love, here is Dink Song on KAXE.
If I had wings like Nora's dove, why, I'd fly up the river to the man I love. Oh, fare thee well, oh, honey, fare thee well. Oh, one of these days, and it won't be long, you're gonna and I'll be gone. Fare thee well, oh honey, oh fare thee well. Remember one night in a drizzling rain, oh, around my heart I felt an aching pain. Oh, fare thee well, oh honey, fare thee well. Oh, when I wore my apron low, I couldn't keep you from around my door. Listened to what my mother said, bed. Oh, fare thee well, oh honey, fare thee well.
That is Dink's song from Ellen Steckert. It's the first of hers that Ross Wild ever heard. I'm Malachi Coons with KAXE. We will pick up my conversation with the pair, with Ellen answering a question I asked about her early radio show that led to her recording Ballads of Careless Love.
Okay, I should first begin by telling you that in those days, if you were a folk singer, so to speak, or a singer of folk songs, it was forbidden, really, in the culture to write your own songs. So there were not singer-songwriters at the time. Really, it was Bob Dylan who eventually, in 1961, really broke that barrier. It had started before. And of course, there was that tradition of labor songs and topical songs that people were writing. I mean, you couldn't do a labor or topical song without writing it. And so I was playing just different themes of songs, like songs of the frontier, songs of the early wars, love songs, lumberjack songs, you just name it. It was any of the categories that people had collected in.
Was that had that already been a passion of yours prior to going to Cornell? I know I saw you started playing music in high school, but as far as folk music as this larger concept to be researched and collected and sought out, was that something that came in Cornell, or was that a part of your life prior to that?
It had become part of my life after I had polio, because my father actually bought for me when I was recuperating and didn't go out and do much, and I was getting bored. He bought me a 4-volume collection called Ozark Mountain Folk Songs, which is one of the classic collections done by professional folklorists who actually took their bodies out and went into the field instead of reading it on a piece of paper and then rearranging it as so people in the city would like it. These are songs that the folk actually sang. And they were just a mystery to me, and they were a wonderful window on the world. And I just fell in love with them, and I learned that other people had collected songs and that there were other people doing this kind of collecting, and there was a whole field of scholarship connected with it. It's like a linguist learning about language, which he knew about all the time, or she knew about all the time, and then discovered it was a study.
Yeah. Did it feel like this is early days of, I think, before folk music is even really, like you said, thought of the way we think of folk music now? Did it feel like the world was wide open and there was countless songs out there to be found and discovered, where it maybe doesn't feel the same now?
Yes, it did feel like that. It was very hard for me to understand what I was seeing. It's like opening a window into a strange world that you have to learn that what to be looking at and how to connect things. And it certainly 4 volumes of songs were enough to convince me that in the Ozark Mountains there were a lot of songs. And if there were in the Ozark Mountains, I thought, well, anywhere. And it occurred to me, too, that they also existed in the city, which is something I still believe. And it's still something that people do not think in urban centers. And, well, there aren't many non-city places anymore, actually, with the expansion of our great culture. But there's an urban folk song revival sort of beginning, and nobody is recognizing it right now, but it'll be interesting to see in another 100 years, or I'm not here. But yes, it did open a big area for me of both study and of the world. It was scary. I can't tell you. Melodies on paper that I had to translate into the... I was just learning the guitar. I had stolen my brother's guitar. Actually, I had usurped it. And I was starting to learn to play. And it wasn't easy. I mean, anybody who's starting the guitar should be encouraged, because developing the calluses on the left hand is just painful. And then learning how to coordinate your two hands, other than like on the piano, is... Well, it's at least a year before you can feel you're actually singing.
When Ross first reached out to you, were you surprised? Did you what did you think when you did you get a message online or something, or how did that first connection happen?
This is my favorite story. I had been at the Newport Folk Festival in 1964, which is the year before Dylan went electric, okay, before Pete Seeger wanted to put a stone through his amplifier. Anyhow, I had taken pictures. I was with a traditional singer named Sarah Gunning, and she was performing, and I just took my camera and took whatever pictures I could find. And I got two pictures of Bob Dylan, who was standing next to me when we were ready to go on, or Sarah was ready to go on. And so I had these two pictures on eBay. And somebody bought both of them. I thought, oh, what a wonderful thing. Somebody bought both of them. And pretty soon I got this letter or this email that said, who took these pictures? Sort of. And so I wrote back and I said, we're supposed to be anonymous on eBay, but my name's Ellen Steckert, and I am a folklorist, and da-da-da-da. And so I get this lovely letter back saying, I've been a fan of yours for years. And I thought, my golly, this guy's got to be at least 70 years old, because, I mean, I made that record a long time ago. I didn't know it was on YouTube, because people my age don't inhabit Spotify or YouTube very much, although I'm trying to get them to. But it turned out that he's this... Well, I didn't realize I had started a correspondence with him. And I did. Ross, did I finally ask you how old you were?
I'm not sure.
How did I find out this secret?
Well, we hopped on a Zoom call shortly after that, and you definitely realized then, I'm sure. But it was an interesting place to meet, eBay.
It was. I really want to talk to your father, please. May I talk to you? Or your grandfather? Yeah. No, but it's been the nicest friendship I have ever really developed. He is a wonderful guy. He's talented, and he's modest, and he's blushing. So other than that, he's talented in what he does. He's a great writer, too. And contrary to my occupation, which was as a professor, he's never gone to college. Or maybe he went to a little college at one time.
I have gone to college.
Oh, shucks. But he writes wonderfully. I mean, he takes my stuff and corrects all my misspellings and then gets the clunky parts out of it and writes it gracefully.
Wow, that is...
So that answers your question quickly, right?
Yeah, it does. That's actually perfect. That's Ellen Steckert and Ross Wild speaking to me here on KAXE.
My darling, my darling, Charlie is my darling, the young chevalier. 'Twas on a Monday morning, right early in the year, that Charlie came to our town, the young chevalier. Oh, Charlie is my darling, my darling, my darling, Charlie is my darling, the young chevalier. As he came marching up the street, the pipes played loud and clear, and all the folk came running out for to meet the chevalier. Oh, Charlie is my darling, my darling, my darling, he is my darling, the young chevalier. With Highland bonnets cocked a gee and braids worth shining clear, they came to fight for Scotland's right and the young chevalier. Oh, Charlie is my darling, my darling, my darling, Charlie is my darling, the young chevalier. They've left their bonny hide and hills, their wives and sweethearts dear, to draw their sword for Scotland's lord, the young chevalier. Oh, Charlie is my darling, my darling, my darling, Charlie is my darling, the young chevalier. But over yon moor mountain and down yon creaky glen, of nothing else our lassies sing but Charlie and his men. Oh, Charlie is my darling, my darling, my darling, Charlie is my darling, the young chevalier.
Another song from Ellen's Ballads of Careless Love album. That was Charlie Is My Darling. This is People Powered KAXE. I'm Malachi Coons. Let's head back to my conversation with Ellen Steckert and Ross Wild. Here they are talking about their age difference.
I'm 27 now. Okay. I just turned 27. Yeah.
Ellen.
You can ask me.
Ellen.
How old am I?
Ellen, how old are you, too? I'll go.
I'm going to be 91 wow. On May 26th. Yeah.
What a cool friendship. What was it like to see someone that much younger than you so passionate? So
passionate.
But be so, excuse me. But to be so passionate about this same world of folk music that you grew up in and inhabited for your whole life?
That's a wonderful question, because I was just shocked. I mean, I thought I had become passé generations back, although my classes kind of liked the stuff that I was playing in class, and I was trying to teach them what traditional singers really sounded like. I didn't sing for them. But now it turns out people of Ross's age think of me practically as a folk. And when they listen to my music, it's an artifact also, almost like I listening to Aunt Molly Jackson or somebody like that from the early revival.
We've been talking about kind of your era, going to school, taking classes with Harold Thompson, deep diving into folk music that way. When it came time to become a teacher, was there path splitting? Did you feel like you needed to follow music or become a teacher, or did you always know you could keep music a part of your life when you continued your pursuit of education?
Wonderful question. Wonderful questions.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, really, that was one of the core problems of my education. I knew I wanted to continue with research. And anthropology was not a field yet. It was just becoming one with sociology. And actually, Harold Thompson, who was the professor I was assisting and who taught folklore, told me when I left to go to graduate school in folklore, he said, I wouldn't have written your recommendation if I knew you were going there. Well, the guy who was the head of the program was a pill, but that, you know, other than that, which is the reason he wouldn't have written me the recommendation, was he said, I would not have told you to go into sociology or anthropology. They're not going to succeed as fields. Well, today we might find they may not, but those are the fields I would have gone into, and they would have been more welcoming than certainly, my major was philosophy. You know, as an undergraduate, and it was one of those backup majors that you could have if you didn't like what you first came in with, which is a long story, but I won't give it to you. I went in as potentially an optical physicist. So being farsighted, I went to a folklore program in graduate school and ended up going from that school, which was Indiana University, which has an excellent folklore program, into the one at the University of Pennsylvania, which really had more folk song scholars. So your question about music or song is really very important, because the field of folklore or the field of ethnomusicology are very difficult fields. Ethnomusicologists don't know much about analyzing words, and the people who are in anthropology or even certainly English think they know what culture is, and the English departments sure don't. But what they have when they talk about culture, it's a capital C. So, although they think they're getting more folky, but who knows? The point is that still anybody who's going to study folklore has got to have some expertise in both areas, in both music and poetry or the use of language. One of the people I've discovered who does is not an academician. He's a fellow who wrote a book about a woman named Connie Converse, and his name is Howard Fishman. And he did an absolutely wonderful job with the book. And I don't want to, you know, brag, but he used me as a consultant for the folk part. And Connie Converse was somebody who was never recognized and who was a marvelous singer-songwriter. And she left New York, this is an irony, the year Bob Dylan came to New York. She gave up, because people wouldn't catch on to her songs. Now people are learning to love them. You obviously, you know who she is.
I love her music. That's one of my favorites. And I have a feeling that you've been asked this before, but did you, when you were in New York, Did you ever run into Connie Converse, or were you aware of her? Because like you said, with people not being supposed to play their own music, she said, screw that. She was writing her own songs all the way back then. Incredibly.
Right. She came through a college education and through a very rigid religious upbringing to not recognize that that was true. If she had gotten to New York earlier and had gotten into that culture, she would have been quiet until it was time, maybe, although she was pretty strong-headed. But no, I did not run into Connie, even though I feel like I have now, having going through the book with Howard. But when she went to Ann Arbor in 61, it was only 10 years later I was in Ann Arbor, or not in Ann Arbor, right next to it in Detroit teaching. So I could have bumped into her in Ann Arbor because I was in Ann Arbor all the time leading sings. Of all things, she should have gone to the sings. Maybe she was there. I have no way. No way of knowing.
That was also the first question I asked her. That's one of the first questions that I asked her. Does she knew Connie Converse? And you didn't know her, but you were in the same circle.
Oh, absolutely.
Or in the same time period. So you could have easily crossed paths. Yeah.
Right. And I probably earlier would have said, well, she's not supposed to write her own songs, and she doesn't have a terribly good voice. And I, the old snobby Ellen. No, I was not snobby at all. In fact, I was fighting it at Cornell. But no, you're right. I should have bumped into her, and I wish I had.
Ellen Steckert speaking about another groundbreaking folk musician in Connie Converse. I'm Malachi Koons. We'll get you back to my conversation with Ellen and with producer Ross Wild in just a moment. Let's hear another one from Ellen now. We'll head away from the ballads of Careless Love and go to a tune that Ellen released just last year in 2025, although it was recorded much earlier. They put it out in honor of Pride Month. It's her version of Four Strong Winds here on KAXE.
Four strong winds that blow lonely, seven seas that run high, all these things that don't change, come what may. But our good times all are gone, and I'm bound for moving on. I'll look for you if I'm ever back this way. I'll go out to Alberta, where there's good there in the fall. Got some friends that I can go to working for. Still, I wish you'd change your mind if I asked you one more time. But we've been through that. Things that don't change, come what may. But our good times all are gone, and I'm bound for moving on. I'll look for you if I'm ever back this way. If I get there before the snow flies, and if things are going good, you could meet me if I sent you down the fair. But by then it would be winter, there ain't much for you to do, and the wind sure can blow lonely way out there. Or strong seas that run high, all these things that don't change, come what may. But our good times are all gone, and I'm bound for
Ellen Steckert and the late Marge Doherty covering the Ian Tyson classic Four Strong Winds. That one was recorded in the mid-60s, and Ellen Steckert released it a year ago in honor of Pride Month. This is People Powered KAXE. I'm Malachi Coons, and we are heading back to my conversation with Ellen Steckert and producer Ross Wild. They've been teaming up to reissue music from throughout the folk singer's long career. Following their thoughts on Connie Converse, I asked Ellen if there were many women in folk music in those early days.
This guy should write a book. You should. No, there were not. Joan Baez blew everybody off stage, except Judy Collins, who I felt was a much better singer than Joan Baez. And I don't want to get too personal about it, but I knew Judy a lot better than I knew Joan. And so Joan Baez was an interesting study in how she approached the folk song, because she tried to look folksy. I mean, she would appear on stage almost barefoot with a plain dress on, you know, looked totally unprepared to go on stage and just stand there and sing. Well, she had a voice that she could do it, and she could blow out all the audience if she wanted to. Some of us couldn't. So the ones who really couldn't developed a wonderful patter that was boring as could be, and often said at the beginning, "This is a traditional British folk song," and then they would proceed to sing something from Argentina or another. But they tried to indicate that they had actually done some looking up of the work they were working on. Yeah.
After Wayne State in Detroit, I just wanted to shout out my dad got his medical degree at Wayne State, so he is a fellow Wayne Stater.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I used to give lectures to the doctors about the about the folk medicine, because there are other areas of folklore. If you're a folklorist, you end up studying. And so I actually did some lectures to the medical students.
Let me think. He would have been there in 76. Is that too late?
No, it's right when I was there.
I came there
in 73, and I left there in 2000.
Okay, I'll have to ask him. No, that's a fun question for later. But what I wanted to ask is, after Wayne State, so when did you move to Minneapolis and to Minnesota?
It was kind of a one of those ping pong ways of getting there. I was a visiting professor at the University of California at Berkeley, which was kind of fun. I was taking over a program that somebody had started who was on sabbatical. And I had a wonderful time there. And while I was there, it became the year that every university wanted to prove they didn't mind women professors. And they tried to hire a female folklorist. And folklore was becoming a really an interesting field for people. So I was at a conference at a place called Wingspread, which is in Wisconsin, and the Johnson & Johnson people run that place for conferences. And when I was there, I got about six different really good offers from different schools. The best offer really was from Brown University. And I turned that down, much to my colleagues who were there at the conference with me with dismay, so I could come to Minnesota, mainly because I loved canoeing in the Boundary Waters. And little did I know that post-polio, which currently has affected me, I had polio when I was, as I said, when I was 13. But I didn't know that would hit me when I got here, and it did. And otherwise I would have probably gone to Brown as a transfer from here. I don't want to cast, as they say, nasturtiums on the English department here, but they weren't really tuned into folklore, even though they wanted a folklorist. They were very glad I came, but I probably wouldn't have stayed, although I loved the state. And as the state folklorist, if I left, that would have been a very bad, the Governor Purpich would have been very unhappy.
Yeah, so you mentioned it there, but you eventually became Minnesota's first state folklorist. Was that pretty soon after coming to Minnesota?
Well, yes, what I did when I got here was I discovered during a concert that I gave at the Walker Art Institute here, I discovered in the audience was a friend of mine who I'd gone to Cornell with, and talk about old what do they call that? The ties, school ties. That's it, for the men who go to private schools and have a special tie. Well, this woman named Phyllis Kahn came backstage and said, well, when you were in school, you were studying. No, I was studying, and you were in politics, because I had become class president. And so but now it's kind of reversed. And she said, why don't you write up something? I said there should be a center here for folk life study. And I wrote a bunch of words that got put into a law that they passed in both the House and the Senate here. The people who quizzed me from the Senate and from the House kept asking me, how can a New Yorker be interested in Minnesota folklore? And I said, well, if anybody's going to notice it, it's going to be a foreigner. Yeah. And that kind of, I suppose, answered the question.
Yeah, that is.
So the stuff, it passed, and the center was developed, and I put it into the Historical Society rather than the university. And Perpich, who was then governor, decided he'd appoint me as state folklorist. There weren't very many of us around, so I was almost default. Then what I started to do was give lectures and concerts all the way around the state. That was a wonderful 2 years. I collected little bits of folklore from people in each of the venues, and watched people walk across the Mississippi up in Itasca or Itasca. You say Itasca or Itasca?
Itasca. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
With a
good.
Strong eye. Yeah. And I did want to, ask about that, because it seems like a natural fit. In New York, you had done a full album of lumberjack songs, and Grand Rapids, where I'm speaking to you from, Paper Mill Town, you know, also there's a huge lumberjack culture from back in the day. It still remains, but was there a fit with that type of music that you found when you got to Minnesota?
Oh, it was wonderful, yes. Blandon gave me a grant, even though they do pollute the river down here. They say that's the folklore of the cities. And may I tell you a story about what the old lumberjack did with me? I told this on WTIP. I don't want to take your thunder away. But
A-okay, we'd love to hear it.
When he was singing his song about lumberjacks to me, Fuzzy, the guy's name, nickname, Ezra Barhunt, said to me, he sang the song, and the last verse says, I'm going to shoulder my peavey and go to the west. And so at the end of the song, Ellen, coming from Cornell as an undergraduate, said, Fuzzy, what is a peavey? And there's, on the tape, you can hear it, there's this hesitation, silence. And then he says, you don't know what a peavey is, huh? And you're up to college. He said, well, you come on down here when you're done there, and you'll commence to know something. So he said, well, I've never forgotten him telling me that. And he's probably right. I probably learned more as a folklorist than I did in all the classes I had at Cornell.
Let's take a listen to one of the songs Ellen learned from Ezra Fuzzy Barhite, a retired lumberjack from New York. It's a collection of songs he learned from his mother and other lumbermen in northern Pennsylvania and southern New York, and Ellen's versions were collected on a 1958 Folkways album, Songs of a New York Lumberjack. Here is poor old Anthony Raleigh.
There was a man when he was first born, poor old Anthony Raleigh. There was a man when he was first born, he hadn't a horse to plow his corn. With his right leg, left leg, upper leg, under leg, poor old Anthony Raleigh. So he hitched the pig with his old cow, poor old Anthony Raleigh. He hitched the pig with his old cow and plowed the corn, the devil knows how. With his right leg, left leg, upper leg, under leg, poor old Anthony Raleigh. Well, the devil, he came to the old man's plow, poor old Anthony Raleigh. The devil, he come to the old man's plow, it's your oldest son that I'm after now. With his right leg, left leg, upper leg, under leg, poor old Anthony Raleigh. You cannot have my oldest son, poor old Anthony Raleigh. You cannot have my oldest son, you'll have to take the old woman or none. With her right leg, left leg, upper leg, under leg, poor old Anthony Raleigh. So the devil, he took her all onto his back, poor old Anthony Raleigh. The devil, he took her all onto his back, and like an old fool he went carrying his pack. With his right leg, left leg, upper leg, under leg, poor old Anthony Raleigh. Well, they carried her over 3 fields more. Poor old Anthony Rowley, he carried her over 3 fields more. At length he came to his own trap door with his right leg, left leg, upper leg, under leg. Poor old Anthony Rowley. There sat little devils all bound in chains. Poor old Anthony Rowley. There sat little devils all bound in chains. She up with her shovel and knocked out their brains with her right leg, left leg, upper leg, under leg. Poor old Anthony Rowley. Then one little devil all with a red cap. Poor old Anthony Rowley. Then one little devil all with a red cap. She up with her shovel and gave him a slap with her right leg, left leg, upper leg, under leg. Poor old Anthony Rowley. Then 3 little devils peeped over the wall. Poor old Anthony Rowley. Then 3 little devils peeped over the wall, crying, carry her back, she'll brain us all. With her right leg, left leg, upper leg, under leg. Poor old Anthony Rowley. So the devil, he took her all onto his back. Poor old Anthony Rowley. The devil, he took her all onto his back, and like an old fool, he went carrying her back with his right leg, left leg, upper leg, under leg. Poor old Anthony Rowley. Well, he carried her over 3 fields more. Poor old Anthony Rowley. He carried her over 3 fields more. At length he came to the old man's door with his right leg, left leg, upper leg, under leg. Poor old Anthony Rowley. Now that shows that the women, they're worse than the men. Poor old Anthony Rowley. That shows that the women, they're worse than the men. They'll go to hell and come back again with their right leg, left leg, upper leg, under leg. Poor old Anthony Rowley.
A song from 1958 and Ellen Steckert here on People Powered KAXE. I'm Malachi Coons. We'll head back to my conversation with Ellen and producer Ross Wild behind the reissue of her Ballads of Careless Love album. We'll pick things up in my conversation with Ellen with a question I posed to her about a different group of folk and blues music collectors like Spider John Kerner and Tony Glover.
I actually did not have much contact with them on purpose. Mm-hmm. Because it would have been I could imagine a professor going into a bunch of people who'd been together for years, who'd been singing songs together. And if I said boo, it would have been taken as a footnote to something. So on a competition, I didn't want to run into that. But also, and this is more important, I sang and I did a major concert at the Walker, and then I stopped singing because I wanted to teach my classes how traditional singers sounded. And I tried to explain that I was a singer of folk songs, and I set my songs in what I was used to and what I had developed myself as a semi-pop, and I hate to think of myself as pop, but a semi-musical or pop singer. That was the only style I knew that I developed. And I considered myself sort of equivalent to Judy Collins, if I had gone really big in any popular way.
Bob Dylan, who you've mentioned a few times, he did say that he saw performances at some point, and he, in his memoir, mentioned that he'd learned some material from a performance of yours. Do you have any idea is that true? Do you have any idea of at what venue that would have happened at? Or
well, you remember the game you used to play as kids called Radio? Or you didn't play that?
I don't know. I should have played it, but I didn't. Well, yeah.
Somebody takes a story or a line, a very short one, whispers it to somebody else, who then whispers it to the next person. And by the time it gets to the 20th, they say what they heard. Well, it's not true by the time it ends. And what this is, actually in Chronicles, Dylan does mention me with Roger Abrams, who was also a professor and sang. And what he says after that is, although these are the people who do the real study of the songs, he said, then he said, and most people who sing in nightclubs or in coffee houses, it's why they give all these boring beginnings to the songs when they're introducing them. People don't remember that second part.
I didn't see that.
They remember that my name was there, right? So Dylan did not hear me sing any songs that he sings, but there is one that he sings, and I know he got it through somehow, either the record that I did of lumberjack ballads or songs, or through print. It's the Lakes of Pontchartrain. He uses my informants, or that's the name we call people who are nice enough to sing for us, Fuzzy's words, exact words. And it's got to be a copy of his, because people don't, when you pass things one to the other, even in singing, people don't get the exact words.
Over swamps of alligators, I made my weary way. Over ties on railroad crossings, my wearied feet did play. Till at length, toward shades of evening, that higher land I would gain. It is there I met with a Creole girl on the lakes of Pontchartrain. Says I, my pretty fair maiden, my money does me no good. If it weren't for the snakes and the alligators, I'd sleep out in the wood. You're welcome, welcome stranger, although my home is plain. For I never will turn a stranger out on the lakes of Pontchartrain. Well, she took me to her father's house and treated me right well. Her hair in golden ringlets down on her shoulders fell. I tried for to win her beauty, I tried that all in vain. So handsome was the Creole girl on the lakes of Pontchartrain. Then I asked her if she'd marry me, she said that never would be. She said she had a sweetheart, but he was far at sea. She said she had a true heart, and true she would remain, until he returned to the Creole girl on the lakes of Pontchartrain. Farewell, my pretty fair maiden, you never will see me more, but I'll never forget your kindness in a cottage by the shore. And at each social circle, the flowing bowl I'll drain. I will drink a health to the Creole girl on the lakes of Pontchartrain.
Ellen Steckert's Lakes of Pontchartrain. Another one from the Folkways album Songs of a New York Lumberjack. And you heard Ellen mention similarities in Bob Dylan's version. It's a song he never recorded in the studio, but has been performing in his live shows since the late 80s, and most recently in 2025. You are listening to an Ellen Steckert special on KAXE, and we'll head back to my conversation with Ellen and a question I asked to producer Ross Wild, who has helped to reissue her albums, on what it means to work with an artist like Ellen.
It's been amazing. Yeah, it's just as someone who... Like Ellen says, she was, you know, surprised that I was into this, into the folk revival and into that time period of folk music. And to me, it's not surprising only because, like a lot of my friends are too. Like I think my generation is pretty is a fan of that time period of music and that. Genre of music, and I feel like folk music is becoming more popular in recent years, especially. And like Connie Converse, like I have so many friends who are just huge fans of Connie Converse, and of course Bob Dylan and Joni Mitchell, and a lot of pop stars today are making or introducing folk into their sound as well. And I think it's really cool to hear that. And when I heard that. Like Ellen and I started talking, and when she started just sending me these old recordings that she had in her archive, and I listened to them, and they have this beautiful quality to them that are kind of like old, like home recordings and demos, kind of similar sonic quality to Connie Converse. And I think that's just that's some of my favorite sounds, like of a recording, when it's like a home recording and it's all like warm and fuzzy, and when I heard she just has, you know, literally thousands of these recordings, it just blew my mind. And it's been an honor to work with her on them and show them to the world, because they need to be heard.
Can I say something? Today, as I was going through, but I don't do research in the library anymore, I do it on the internet, I discovered that there is, I think it's called the Folklore Hall of Fame. I just about croaked when I saw it, because I was looking for my notes here. I was taking notes on it madly, because they have people like Taj Mahal and any number of people in it, like Baez and Dylan, who are not folk singers. They're singers of folk songs, but who cares? I mean, because folk, to somebody of my generation or my scholarship, is not a value word. It's a word that describes the song and the way it got to where it is. And then when you discover it, you sing it. And what you're singing it in today, mostly, is in an urban folk style that most folklorists do not recognize. So there's so little folk song scholarship these days that I stand out because there aren't many people around like me. But it's interesting for me in the sense because you don't live to be 90 and think that you were alive and vital in a past generation. And I think of myself thinking of my mother in the swinging 20s. And that was another generation for me. I mean, it was 10 years before I was born, you know. I shouldn't be surprised, but it now I understand it better. And most folklorists, when they hear that they're folk singers today, who think of themselves as folk singers, think of themselves as in a commercial type of setting. They go, if I can, that means they don't like it. And they think that's being commercial was one of the negative things you weren't allowed to be. So if you find folk song clubs, and I won't mention any, that think that you guys, poor Ross, Ross is a musician and a wonderful musician, and you should look him up on Spotify and other places, that when you hear these people singing, they're singing what is in an urban tradition that most people today, because they're stuck in the back tradition, don't like to say that being looking forward to maybe being commercial is a positive. I mean, in those days, you wanted to be accepted by your community, and the community today is the commercial community.
Thank you so much for sharing your love for folklore and folk music, and for coming on and chatting today. I think it's been really fun. I'm a big fan of this album. We've got Ballads of Careless Love at KEXC playing songs from it right now. You mentioned there's a whole archive. There's a whole other world. Are you two planning to continue working together, or what is next for your relationship as far as the music goes?
Ross has to answer that because I'm dependent upon him totally.
No, well, yeah, we definitely got more albums coming out. We also have released two volumes of this kind of continuing compilation of albums called Go Around Songs that we have, and those are streaming on all platforms. And that's just those are compilations of just a bunch of tape recordings Ellen made from the 1950s to the 1980s.
That were not recorded, right?
Yeah, and so we're going to continue doing that. That's just kind of an ongoing project because, her tapes are seemingly endless, which is a wonderful thing.
You have your own career, so I try to get him to do his own rehearsing and and his own work. And working on my old recordings is not easy.
Yeah, we will check out Ross's music as well. That is Ellen Stecher and Ross Wild, who have been working together to reissue Ellen Stecher's music. Thank you so much for coming on and talking today, and it's really nice to hear from you both.
Went to the sea. What did I spy? I spied a maid. She was afraid to cry, and afraid to die. You'll weep, you'll faint, you'll die. When in my arms you lie. You'll weep, you'll faint, you'll die. I spied a maid. She was afraid to cry and afraid to die. Well, you'll weep, you'll faint, you'll die when in my arms you lie.
Went to the Sea, Ellen Steckert with a song on the Go Around Songs Volume 1 compilation. They've already released another one, and Ross and Ellen both mentioning that'll be an ongoing project to release more music from her long archive and collection of home recordings. My thanks to Ellen and to Ross for doing the interview and sharing their passion with Ellen's music and folklore in general here on KAXE. You can look for that full conversation if you'd like to revisit it or if you missed anything at kaxe.org at a future date. We will play us out today with another one going back to the Ballads of Careless Love album, Hard to Find and recently reissued with help from Ross. The final song we're going to hear today is Hand Me Down My Walking Cane. It's Ellen Steckert on People-Powered Radio KAXE.
Hand me down my walking cane. Hand me down my walking cane. Oh, hand me down my walking cane. I'm gonna catch that midnight train, and all my sins are taken away. I got drunk, and I got in jail. I got drunk, and I got in jail. Oh, I got drunk and I got in jail, and there ain't nobody for to go my bail, and all my sins are taken away. Come on, mama, mama, and go my bail. Come on, mama, and go my bail. Oh, come on, mama, and go my bail, and get me out of this buggy jail, and all my sins are taken away. If I'd listen to what mother said, if I'd listen to what mother said, oh, and if I'd listen to what mother said, I'd be sleeping in a feather bed, and all my sins are taken away. Hand me down my walking cane. Hand me down my walking cane. Oh, hand me down my walking cane. I'm gonna catch that midnight train, and all my sins are taken away.
Listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley, Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are People Powered Radio in Northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
Bonjour, hello. Welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Leah Lem. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Hyde E. Erdrich. She's a member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa in North Dakota. Hyde is an author, researcher, educator, and curator. In 2024, she was the inaugural Minneapolis Poet Laureate, and in 2025, she served as the James and Lois Welch Distinguished Native American Visiting Writer at the University of Montana, Missoula. In our conversation, Hyde examines her interest in researching family history and tracing ancestral migrations. She talks about the power of collaboration, working alongside literary and visual artists. Please enjoy our conversation from September 2024.